Blog Talk Radio.
Talk with Angela Butler. Today's interview with Mr. Storm Bradford. Mr. Storm Bradford is an attorney. He's not only an attorney, he's going to talk about dealing with foreclosures and banks and among other topics, but that is the main topic. How are you doing this afternoon, Mr. Bradford?
I'm doing fine. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing fine, sir. Good afternoon. Made it through the storm, the hurricane.
Yeah, you made it through the rain.
Yes, sir, I did. Hurricane Michael.
I bet you won't be naming the kids by the name of Michael.
Yeah, I won't be forgetting the name Hurricane Michael. Okay, so you're a law partner, attorney Bradford. You're a law partner on call. You're owner, mortgage fraud examiners, owner mortgage note portfolio examiners. You also train people. Am I correct? Train other attorneys.
Well, I don't practice. I'm trained as one, but I don't practice. Years ago, I was going to practice, but I had some lawyers come to me and ask me for some stuff, and then I had a couple other lawyers come to me on some other different issues, and then it became more profitable for me, instead of having a stable of clients of my own, would be to have attorneys come to me, because at least if the attorneys came to me, I was going to get paid. So that's how I started out with the litigation support company. And we had, like, basically one of the first innocence projects. We were getting wrongfully convicted people out of jail. And then attorneys would come and say, well, hell, if you can get them out of jail once they got them, you must know how to keep them from going in the first place. We said, yeah, we can do that. So for about 30 years, or not quite 30 years, we were just doing a bunch of criminal defense type stuff. And intermittently, we would get civil stuff. We were brought in to help a law firm on a case to sue Dole Pineapple. The client got $18 million. We were brought in on some other civil cases, wrongful death cases, where clients got millions, legal malpractice cases for a guy that I got out of jail. And then this law firm brought me in to help him sue to get money on that. We got him millions. And then about 12 years ago, we started getting a lot of phone calls on how do you win these foreclosure cases? And we said, well, you know, it's a breach of contract case. You have to attack the contract. So then we got involved in that. And then a couple of years back, we started getting a lot of phone calls from these pension funds and hedge funds who buy these notes from the major players like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. For example, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac sold last year $18 billion with a B in non-performing notes. Those are what they sound like. They're notes where the homeowner's not paying, they're non-performing. So they buy these notes at a discount, they come to us to have us analyze the notes for them. So basically that's, you know, what we've been doing and how we've been doing it for almost 40 years.
Yes, sir. And your company is Law Partner On Call. You did this 41 years
that's now. That's the litigation support company, the one that handles the analyzing the mortgage transactions is Mortgage Fraud Examiners, and the one who examines the notes for the pension funds, hedge funds, and other investors is Mortgage Note and Portfolio Examiners.
You also teach other lawyers, is my understanding, instruct other lawyers at your firm?
Yeah, we have, in the firm, we have practicing attorneys, retired attorneys, other individuals. Everybody that's here, you know, has a legal background, except for our appraisal people.
Yes, sir. Okay. So you, at Law Partner On Call in Virginia, in Reston, Virginia, your company does litigation support services. You specialize in criminal defense, expert in annulling indictments, DUI, writ writing, arresting judgments, etc. So I went into a little bit more detail about what you do, even though you're not necessarily taking cases.
We don't take cases ourselves. Angela, we don't take cases ourselves. Attorneys come to us, and for us to help them win their case, and they come to us to do a lot of different things. They may come to us and say, look, I want you to, if it's a civil case where somebody, they're going to sue somebody, they have us write the complaint, coach them on how to win it, do legal research for them, do discovery for them, write briefs, motions, affidavits for them. If it's a criminal case, they come to us and they say, look, we were trying to get our guy off. And same thing, only this time we'd be writing briefs, motions, affidavits, jury instructions, and things like that, and giving them a plan of action to win. And so basically that's what we do as far as the litigation support company is concerned.
Okay. Now, the mortgage fraud examiner. Please talk about this, about what we talked about earlier, last week over the phone, about the appraisers and foreclosures on homes and how you can stop a foreclosure and the what you were talking about appraisals and the mistakes that are made in them.
Yeah, first of all, what everybody doesn't understand, and that's why there's been so many foreclosures, is attorneys, homeowners don't understand what a foreclosure actually is. A foreclosure is nothing more than a breach of contract case. The contract that we sign with the bank is very clear. We promised the bank that we would make timely payments, and if we didn't, the bank could take the house. Period. End of conversation. Just like if we financed a car and didn't make payments, what would happen? They come by with a tow truck. They tow our car away. Why? Because that's what's in the contract. We agreed that they could do that. So it's a breach of contract case because we failed to make payments. Most states are non-judicial states. That's where all they have to do is run some ads in the paper and your house is gone. The reason why most states are non-judicial states is the legislatures, they looked at it and said, look, there's really no need to get a court involved. This is basically a confessed judgment. The homeowner said, if I don't make payments, you can go ahead and have the house. And even in a judicial state where they have to sue you to foreclose, all the bank has to do is come in and say, Your Honor, here's the contract between Mr. Jones and ourselves. let me draw your attention to this clause in the contract, where Mr. Jones agreed that if you failed to make timely payments, we could take the house. Your Honor, here's the proof you didn't make timely payments. Pretty cut and dry. Now, how do we overcome the fact that we breached the contract? Well, in the eyes of the law, we're the bad guy if we breach the contract. So the only way that we can overcome our breach is to show a problem with the contract. Now, luckily, there's always problems with these contracts. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, they sent out some of their bank examiners, and they analyzed a couple hundred or so mortgage transactions and found that 83% of the mortgages had problems, the transaction itself, and 76% of the appraisals were bad. So look at, you got an 83% chance the mortgage transaction itself is bad and a 76% chance that the appraisal's bad. So when you combine them together, what's the chance there's something wrong with that contract? So now we've done many, 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 many more than they've done. And because of that, our statistics are just a touch higher. 90% of the mortgages are bad and 80% of the appraisals are bad. But I tell people, so look, just let's just rely on what the FDIC said, 83 and 76. We've never done an analysis ever that we didn't find something that a homeowner could use. Now, we obviously can't make stuff up. What happened in the transaction happened. All we do is analyze the transaction and put down what the and show what the evidence is of any problems with that contract. That's why some people that attack the contract, there's been dozens of multi-million dollar awards, dozens and dozens of free title to property, and every type of conceivable settlement offer you can think of. So what determines whether somebody gets millions or a free title or, you know, just some sort of a smaller settlement is based upon what happened in that transaction. You know, we have homeowners that come back and they're, oh, Storm, you know, you guys, you're the best thing since canned beer. You saved my house. You did. I said, hold it, stop. We didn't save your house. Oh, yeah, you saved my house. You know, I was a week away. They were taking my house. You saved my house. I said, wait a minute. We didn't do anything other than analyze your transaction. What happened in your transaction happened. We didn't save your house. You saved your house. Just yes. As if you thought that you
but
had a medical problem.
Okay.
What was that?
I was going to say, but you should get the credit for it. I mean,
yeah,
that's
but,
why they're saying.
Yeah, they want to give us credit, and I'm saying, wait a minute. We didn't save your house. You saved your house by getting the analysis done. Just as if you thought you had a medical problem and went and got a CAT scan and an MRI done, and it turned out that you caught cancer at its earliest stage that was totally curable. Well, the guys who did the MRI and CAT scan isn't the one who saved your life. You were the one who saved your life by going and get the CAT scan. And that's what we tell homeowners. You did it, not us. All we did was analyze that transaction and gave you what we found within that transaction.
What
it's really, really
common. What are some of the
well, obviously, appraisal fraud is very common. So is broker fraud. We find on average countrywide around the United States, on average about 80% of the time we find appraisal fraud. But there's some states that we call like foreclosure capitals, Florida, Arizona, Nevada, California, New York, Illinois, places like that, Georgia. We find appraisal fraud as high as 90% of the time. We find broker fraud. We probably find that probably 65% of the time. There's title company fraud. There's all kinds of things. We've identified about 100 things pre-foreclosure that can be wrong with the mortgage transaction. So there's all kinds of ways, but the key is you have to analyze that transaction in order to find out what happened. And then that's what you take, and that's what goes in a letter, which is in the contract. The contract calls for the homeowner to send this letter to them outlining what transpired so they can take, quote, corrective action. It's all in the contract. So you don't even need a lawyer the vast majority of time, because the contract itself calls for the homeowner to send this letter outlining the problems for them to fix. What homeowners do, they come to us, we analyze the transaction, we even give them a template for this letter, and that letter goes off to, depending upon the state that you're in, that letter goes off to the bank, obviously, and goes in a non-judicial state to the trustee, in a judicial state to the law firm representing the bank, and we give you all the state and federal entities to CC a copy to, so now you got the government climbing up their behinds. Works like a shot. But the key is finding out what happened in that transaction. Here's the sad part, Angela, that upsets us and upsets homeowners that become our clients. Because almost every homeowner that comes to us has already been scammed. They've either been scammed with one of these scams, securitization audit, forensic loan audit, chain of title audit scammers, or somebody else giving them a bunch of nonsense that the bank never lent them money, or some other garbage that's out there, stall attorneys, you know, telling them a bunch of stuff that's just absolute BS. So when they get to us and they find out it's all BS, and we give them proof of it. I'm one of these people, I'm not going to tell you something, I'm going to show you where it's nonsense. So they get quite upset when they see that they've been scammed. I would say almost every homeowner out there, when people call us, the people that have that I call have drank the Kool-Aid, that bought into all the noise and the lies and the other misinformation that's out there, versus people that don't, it's probably 990 out of 1,000 have already been scammed by somebody. It's really sad. And actually what these scammers are doing, they're throwing mud in clear water, because this stuff is really, really simple. It's a contract that we signed, and we have to abide by the contract. And when we tell the bank that they can, all the bank's doing is doing what we told them to do. They're just doing, you said I could take the house, I'm taking the house. Just like you and I, if we lent money to somebody and they didn't pay us back and the collateral was the house, if they don't give us the money, we're going to take the house.
Oh, goodness.
So, this isn't high math. This is really easy stuff. The problem of it is when you have all these scammers out there ripping people off.
Yes,
you got
sir.
Thousands of these securitization, forensic loan audit, chain of title auditors out there that the courts have called the auditors charlatans and their paperwork empty gimmickry. And then you have these stall attorneys that they make all these stall arguments. And the longer that you're in the house, you're making payments to the attorney. But the result's always the same, because they didn't attack the contract because they don't know how. And the homeowner ends up losing their house after spending some, in a lot of instances, tens of thousands of dollars. I gave a talk in Florida a few years back, and it was 100 so-called foreclosure defense attorneys, and they had had over 100,000 clients. Some of these lawyers had had 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 clients, just them.
Goodness.
And the average that they were charging these homeowners was upwards of $40,000, because in judicial states, from the time a homeowner misses his first payment until he gets booted out of the house is a minimum of 3 years if they did nothing. If they did nothing at all, all they did was sit there for 3 years, did nothing, it would take 3 years to put them out because it'd take that long to wind its way through the court system. But here's this stall attorney that charged them $2,500 up front and $1,000 a month for 36 months. That's 40 grand. So,
yes, that's a lot.
And not one of those attorneys had ever won a case. Because you can't win making arguments like produce the note and MERS and securitization and standing and assignment that didn't get into the trust in time and robo-signing and all that other nonsense. Doesn't work.
Oh, all right. So you're really doing a good thing.
Yeah. Angela, we teach young attorneys and older attorneys. And I teach them all the same thing. A couple different adages. It's not what you allege, it's what you can prove. You can go in and allege anything, but you better have proof to back it up. So it's what you can prove is what carries the day. But, you know, these and also court cases in a judicial state, court cases are always a question before the court. The question before the court might be, did Angela run the red light? Did Angela speed? Did Angela drive drunk? Did Angela rob the bank? That's the question before the court. Now, the prosecutor comes in, they put their evidence on, and the defense gets to put their evidence on. And at the end of the day, if it comes back, if the answer to the question is yes, Angela gets to go to jail. If the answer to the question is no, you get to walk free. So, same thing with these foreclosures. The question is, did Angela breach the contract? If it comes back yes, then they take the house. If you have a defense to the breach of that contract, then you get to walk away, and then depending upon how egregious the wrong acts were, would be determinative of what you would get as a remedy.
All right. Also, I want to ask you.
This isn't high math. It's really easy stuff.
Yes, sir. I understand what you're saying. It does sound easy because you know it. But if you don't know it, it's not easy.
There's another old adage. If it doesn't make sense, it's nonsense. So you think about it. You go to court, and I'll get, this is a real life situation. I was on a national radio program a couple of years or so back, and a lady called in who had been an attorney for 48 years. And she said, Storm, I didn't hear the beginning of the show. She said, are you a judge? And I forgot whatever the state was. Let's say it was Illinois. Are you a judge here in Illinois? No. Why do you ask? Well, I was before this judge last week, and he said almost verbatim what you said on the radio this morning. And I said, what's that? I said a lot of things. Can you be a little more specific? And she says, yes, as I said, I've been an attorney for 48 years, and I bet you this judge wasn't even 48 years old. And I'm before the judge, and I'm arguing to the judge. I said, well, Your Honor, you know, this loan was securitized, and MERS was involved. And the judge stopped me and said, ma'am, with all due respect to your 48 years as learned counsel, how did any of that cause your client to fail to make timely payments, thus breaching the contract? She said, startled me when he said that. And then I went on and I said, but judge, you know, you got to understand the chain of title from A to B and C to D, and it was robo-signed. And the judge stopped me again and said, ma'am, again, with my utmost respect to you, for almost a half a century of working in the legal profession, how did that cause your client to breach the contract? Please tell me that the other side breached first, or that there's an error that would allow me to void this contract, or that your client was fraudulently induced into this contract, or that there's some sort of set-offs in this contract, or some sort of statutory or regulatory mandate that wasn't followed, Because if you can't, as a matter of law, I have to uphold that contract and allow the bank to take that home. She said,
okay.
Storm, that's exactly what you said. I said, that's exactly how it works.
Okay. All right. So you, a private citizen cannot hire you, am I correct?
Angela,
hi, Mr. Baffert. Hi, how are you, sir? You the call drop. Go ahead,
yeah.
Sir.
No. What was the last thing you heard?
You were saying exactly what I said. The client had pretty much said the same thing as you, and I was going to ask.
The judge said verbatim what you had said. But that's how it works. I mean, it's really, really simple stuff. The key is what, you know, it's like that commercial on television, what's in your wallet? The question is, what's in your transaction? That's what you need to find out.
That's true, because a home is usually most people, the biggest investment is their home, usually, unless they decide not to. A person's home, some people wait till they retire, some people do it when they're younger. But a home is most people's biggest investment. So it's a great thing that you are doing, and you're very skilled at it, very intelligent. And
well,
you've been
at
this for 42 years.
But you know what it is again, it's like it's common sense. I mean, common sense dictates that if you're in a position, and like I tell people all the time, I don't care if it's a contract for a house, for a car, for services, for employment, for whatever. If you're the party who breached, you're the bad guy in the eyes of the law. And the only way that you can overcome your breach is to be able to show there's a problem with that contract. And luckily, again, these mortgage contracts, they're full of problems. And they're full of problems because you have an industry that nobody gets paid unless there's a loan. The homeowner doesn't sell his house. The real estate agent doesn't make a commission. The mortgage broker doesn't make a commission. The bank doesn't make interest off the loan. The title company doesn't get paid to do the title search, the title insurance, and closing the deal. Nobody gets paid unless there's a loan. So people will do things in order to get paid. And I say do things, they'll skirt the law in order to get paid. That's why you find all the problems that you have. What was quite common was they can't do it anymore. They changed the law. But it used to be back from like 2000 to 2008, you'd have these brokers would have what they called their approved appraiser list. And what they would do is they call up one of the lawyers on their quote approved appraiser list and say, hey, Joe, I need for you to come back with $400,000 value on this house so I can get this deal done. Joe, the appraiser, would go out, come back and say, it's not worth $400,000. It's only worth $275,000. And the broker said, hey, Joe, need I remind you that you're on our approved appraiser list, which you won't be any longer unless you give me $400,000. Well, Joe, the appraiser, wanted to keep getting the business. So what he would do is he said, well, nobody's going to know the better. I'm just going to go ahead and say it's worth $400,000. Well, what happened? You just bought a house that was already underwater.
So basically,
I had a question.
I want to ask you that doesn't have to do with foreclosures. You also help a criminal defense attorneys?
Yeah, we do. We help criminal defense attorneys win their cases, yes.
All right. I know there are cases you already told me to not talk about that they've asked your advice on, so I'm not going to say anything. You help people with RRS also. Am I correct, Rico?
We help people. If it's a criminal case, we have, you know, we get involved in those cases to help them defend their case, yes. And I can tell you, and, you know, on our website, Law Partner on Call, we have testimonials from attorneys. We have testimonials of attorneys that use us. And I can tell you, most criminal defense attorneys win 6 to 10% of their cases. The cases, criminal defense cases that we've been involved in, we acquitted 95% of the defendants.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. You've been doing this
which is utterly unheard of.
Yes, sir. Prosecutors are really good at plea deals and sending people to prison.
We tell people that if they would bring me in to interview the criminal defendant, and I would come in and I would tell the criminal defendant, I say, look, here's the deal. If you want to plead guilty, you go find somebody else to plead guilty. But you don't need to pay a lawyer to plead guilty. You plead guilty for free. If you want the OJ defense, you came to the right place.
Oh, wow. So the hourly rate for like $150 an hour.
It depends on the kind of work that we have to do. We have a whole list of things that we do. Now, me personally, I get involved in the indictment works and annulling indictments and things like that. Well, I'm anywhere from $500 to $1,000 an hour. But for that stuff, but most of the stuff that we do, we're in the $150, $200 an hour range.
Okay. All right. So, but you don't, I want the people who will listen to this show later on to understand for certain that you don't represent individuals. Am I correct on that?
No, we don't represent anyone. We don't represent them. What we do is the attorneys that have clients come to us, and then what we do is we orchestrate the case for them.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make clear about what I understood that, but I just wanted to make sure other people would understand their lawyers have to call you.
I'll tell you, Angela, that what I tell criminal defendants all the time, I said, look, don't listen to these lawyers that want to plead you guilty, because most of these guys, they don't even blow the dust off of a law book and stand there while the defendant has a colloquy with the judge, and the lawyer doesn't say a damn thing. And then you plead guilty, then judge says, okay, based on what you said, I'm going to find you guilty, and that's that. And here's this lawyer there. I had a guy call me up one day. His lawyer charged him $50,000 to plead guilty. I said, you can plead guilty for free.
Yes, you can plead guilty for free.
I had a guy years ago. He was the law partner of Al Gore Sr. He was the law partner of Al Gore Sr. And he got involved in this financial deal, and they came after him criminally for this financial deal. And this is in Washington, D.C., and he asked me to go with him to this law firm. So I go with him, and he was talking to these guys about hiring them to represent him in this case. And anyway, we go in to this building down on K Street, and we go in and we get on this elevator, and here's this guy telling us how this is Brazilian wood, you know, inside the elevator, and there's like this picture, and he's like, well, this picture's, you know, $50,000, and we got it from here. And then we go upstairs to this boardroom, and he has this beautiful, you know, boardroom a table, and he told us that table was $250,000, and he's just gone on and on and on. And I'm thinking the whole time, I said, I can't wait to hear what this guy wants to represent, you know, represent him. He wanted $400,000 to represent him. $400,000. Okay. So
a lot of money.
So I said to him, I said, what's your defense? And he goes, well, I don't know yet. So I looked at my guy and I said, come on, let's go.
All right.
I wrote one brief and they dismissed the case.
All right. One brief and they dismissed the case. Wow, you're good.
I wrote one brief and the government dismissed the case, and this turkey wanted $400,000 to represent him.
I think it's a shame that you didn't that you're not practicing law for individuals. But okay, I understand. That's not what
you're
doing.
I don't do that because it's easier for me because, you know, I can help a lot more people by, you know, because I got my staff that I can, you know, make sure that we do certain stuff. And then nothing goes out the door unless it comes by me. But, I mean, I got staff that can do stuff. And so it's much easier, and I can help more people that way than, again, to practice law and just have, you know, a few clients here and there.
But you're not a paralegal. You're an attorney. That's what I find amazing. But, you know,
yeah.
I'm sure you've had a lot of high-profile clients. Mr. Bill Cosby, what do you think about his case? I'm just curious. He's in prison now, but I'm just curious, in your opinion, what would you have to deal with Mr. Cosby?
Well, first of all, I think his lawyers – made a grave mistake, and I think the grave mistake was not allowing him to take the stand. I think that was a grave mistake. I've always told every criminal defendant, you are going to take the stand. And you know why? Because your name's up on the marquee. It's the United States government against Joe Jones. Or it's the state of Illinois against Joe Jones. You're up on the marquee. And that jury, and I'd never, ever have a bench trial. It would always be a jury trial. Because you're dealing, if it's a bench trial, you got one guy. If it's a jury trial, all you got to do, that prosecutor's got to convince 12. You've only got to convince one. And so, you know, I always told him, you got to testify, because I don't care how many jury instructions that's given to that jury. That jury wants to hear from you. And if they don't hear from you, they're right in their mind. They're, hey, if this guy, you know, was innocent, he'd want to stand up for himself. That's how that jury thinks.
Yes, sir.
You know, there's a show on TV now. I think it's called Bull.
Yes, sir.
It's about a jury consultant that, you know, helps these people. I mean, that's part of what we do. I also have a fellow in clinical hypnosis, and I know how the brain works, and I know how these jurors look at things. And, you know, they're looking at that criminal defendant. They want to know why he's not getting up there defending himself. But in Bill Cosby's case, he definitely should have taken the stand because, you know, basically you know, the prosecution's case was is that he was, you know, drugging these women and then sexually assaulting them. And, you know, there was no defense to that. They got to put on all their evidence, and he didn't get a chance to get up and say, hey, well, wait a minute. You know, they came in here and asked me for something. I gave it to them. I didn't take advantage of them. It was all consensual sex. I mean, think about it. Think about it from this aspect. You know, if, you know, I'm not a woman, but I would think that if a woman drinks, if a woman's drinking, I'm sure it's happened many times. I'm sure it's happened many times to women that they drank, they lost their inhibitions, and then they had sex, and then woke up the next day and regretted what they did. I'm sure it's happened to many women.
It happens to men and women.
But whose fault was that? Was it the man's fault that had sex with them, that allowed them to drink and lose their inhibitions? Do we blame him? Do we blame, you know, how is that man at fault for having sex with this woman who wanted to have sex? How is he wrong?
That he drugged them.
Well, that's what they said. That's what they said.
But
you
don't feel that women would really...
If a woman comes in and says, look, will you make me a martini? And the man makes a martini for that lady. And then the lady says, I'd like another one. So he gives her another martini. Now this lady loses her inhibitions and they have sex. Did he drug that woman? Did he force that woman to take that drink? No. So, you know, here they're saying, oh, well, he gave these women these drugs. Maybe those women wanted those drugs.
I find it hard to believe that a woman would take pills and drink and stuff.
First of all, it's like, you know, a lot of the, you know, it's a known fact, women like people that are in power. Bill Cosby didn't have to drug anybody to have sex with him. I mean, anybody believes that is a
thing. It was a common drug that he was using. The pills that he was using was a common drug back then. In the 70s, the 80s, come down off a high
matter.
Or something.
Yeah, but Angela, that doesn't matter because think about it logically. Do you think Bill Cosby really had to drug a woman to have sex with him? I don't.
No, I don't really believe that because he's so powerful and famous, especially in the 80s and 90s and 70s, 80s and 90s. He was one of the first black men to do a lot of things.
Yeah, and he was well-respected. And women like people that are powerful. Look, I was at a party one time.
I just don't believe he did it. That's all.
Yeah. Well, here's the list. I was at a party one time, and there was Brad Pitt was on it. And there's four or five women standing there, and they're all saying, oh, I love this Brad Pitt. I love this Brad Pitt. And this one woman said, is my husband listening? And I'm trying to hear what the guy say, and they looked around, and the husband's on the side of the room. She goes, I'd have sex with Brad Pitt so quick to make his head spin. And these three or four other women said, oh, I'd be right behind you. I'm with you. You know, so these women are just saying how they want to have sex with Brad Pitt.